Welcome. You're listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. We're Sandy and Ron Fraser. Say hello, dear.
Hi, I'm here. Welcome.
Today we thought we'd talk a little bit about how people become Baha'is. We've invited you to join us at the end of each previous podcast, and some of you may have been wondering how to go about that. It's a much simpler process than other religions that require you to go through some series of courses. The Baha'is used to do that, but they don't do that anymore. There are a series of courses that people can take, but they're not required before you actually become a Baha'i. Sandy, why don't you start off talking about how you became a Baha'i? Not the whole story, just the sort of the process.
For me, I had been looking at the Baha'i faith for maybe a year or more, and how I was looking at the Baha'i faith was through a series of meetings. There was an Institute for Race Unity that was working in the area that I was living in, and I found out about the meetings through a volunteer. I used to be a volunteer coordinator, and really the highlight of my life, the working life, was working with volunteers, really special people, filled with lots of virtues, and really having time to share what's most important in their lives and in their hearts. And this one incredible volunteer that I had, she shared with me the name of an individual that was sponsoring these meetings in the geographic area where I lived. And I got in touch with this another incredible woman, and she invited me to a series of these meetings. They were once a month, and they were wonderful topics that they covered, mostly about racial unity, world peace, topics like that, that were just really, you know, incredible topics that you don't usually sit around and chit-chat with friends about, you know, on a regular basis. They were deep and insightful talks, and given by such distinguished people of all different backgrounds and race, ethnicity. And it was just incredible to hear these speakers. I would come each month eagerly wanting to hear the next one. And I felt a very wonderful sense of belonging in this community of newfound friends. Some of the people started inviting me to their homes. At this time, these meetings were held at a local hotel in one of their meeting rooms, assembly rooms, which was really neutral territory in a sense in looking back. And I really didn't understand that these people were people from a religious background. It wasn't until after I had been going for quite some time that I found out that these people were Baha'is, but I didn't really understand what that meant at all. I thought, well, they're nice people. I'll just keep going, and never heard of it before, but that's okay. Then as I started going to their homes, it felt so wonderful to be included. You know, here I was in a new group, a new social group, and really chatting and discussing about different things that were really things that life are made of, you know, life after death and prayer and just wonderful topics. I just couldn't get this conversation anywhere. I could only get it with this group of Baha'is. And they invited me to their homes. When they invited me to their homes, it was considered firesides. And so I was going to these firesides, and many of them were just talks in the evening I worked during that time, so that fit my schedule very nicely. And the meetings that the Race Unity Institute for Race Unity had were on Saturdays, on weekends, so that worked also with my schedule. And the reason I knew I needed these meetings was because I had gone through a very difficult job situation where I felt there was some injustices being done, and I felt very bitter about them. Of course, you know, with me being a person of color and my supervisor, my immediate supervisor, being different from my own ethnicity, I felt like there was a racial motivation there, and I felt very bitter and angry about the whole situation, and I knew I did not want to feel angry about every person of that background that was other than mine. So I felt like these meetings were part of my healing process, and they were really incredible. And I was able to see people who were different from myself in a better light. But I kept going to these series of firesides, and I wasn't the only one. There were, you know, a couple other people who were going too on a regular basis. And we all got to know each other. There were a lot more Baha'is there, but what was so neat about these meetings were that there were different people, different ages, different ethnicities. It just felt so wonderful. And I think that's the thing that has always pleased me about being around the Baha'is, is that it's not just going to be one set of people that looks just like each other. These are going to be like-minded people, but all different faces. And that was what was so pleasing for me. You know, we often talk about having equality and loving our brothers and sisters of other races, but I feel like the Baha'is really put this practice into place. They really walk the talk. I really feel good about that. And I look for that when I join groups. Now, I want to see diversity. It's very important to me, and the Baha'is definitely have diversity. I was asked at one of these meetings one evening if I believed in Baha'u'llah, and I said that I did believe in Baha'u'llah. They asked if I had any questions, and I did have questions. I said, well, one of my questions was, why do people pray to Baha'u'llah, you know, and not God? And that question was answered for me. It's very similar in the Christian religion, especially the Catholic religion, for example, people praying to saints and patron saints and to Mary and to Jesus. It's the same way of praying that helped me understand very much, you know, that Baha'u'llah is a manifestation of God. And that's one way that I get to know God as best I can, is through the manifestations.
Are you saying that Baha'is don't pray to God?
Oh, no. No, I'm saying that they do pray to God.
I don't think we're being clear.
Oh.
Are you praying to Baha'u'llah as God? Are you praying to God as God? Are you praying to Baha'u'llah as your God?
No.
Who are you praying to?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm praying to God. When I ask Baha'u'llah for help, I know that Baha'u'llah is a manifestation, that Baha'u'llah is not God. I don't know how to describe it, but I know that there is a difference.
Well, maybe one way to say it is that we're free to pray to, we feel as Baha'is that we're connected to everyone who's in the next world. So if I want to pray to my grandfather, I can pray to my grandfather. If I want to pray to Baha'u'llah, if I want to pray to Abdu'l-Baha, if I want to pray to God himself, it doesn't matter. I am just asking for help. If I'm not praying to my grandfather as if he's a deity. I'm not praying to Baha'u'llah as if he's a deity.
Well, exactly.
I can talk to anybody that's up there or wherever that is.
Yeah, I guess the Baha'is feel like the concourse is there and they are looking for us to ask them for help. I mean, they're wanting to help us in whatever way, but they have to be asked.
Christians talk about a personal relationship with Christ. And I think that's what we're talking about here, that we feel like we have a personal relationship with everybody up there, including Christ. But we have a personal relationship that we can talk to Baha'u'llah. We have a personal relationship we can talk to Abdu'l-Baha. We have personal relationships with our mothers and grandmothers and whoever else that we want to talk to, and that they can hear us, that this isn't it's not something imaginary that we're sending good thoughts their way or something. There's a writing where Abdu'l-Baha says, they are more aware of you than you are of your own self. So I'm sure they love to hear from us from time to time.
And particularly when you're lost and you're so unaware of yourself.
Yes.
Thank you, dear. You always seem to be able to explain what's on my mind and what I can't seem to...
Well, I just wanted to make sure that people understood that, because I didn't want them to think. I could imagine someone who was maybe listening and being very critical saying, well, these people are just praying to Baha'u'llah as if Baha'u'llah is a deity, and they're not praying to God at all.
No.
They're not allowed to pray to God. You know,
they only can
pray to Baha'u'llah or something. So I just want to make sure there wasn't that kind of a misunderstanding going on.
Thank you.
But tell us about the process of actually becoming a Baha'i. You've talked about the lead up.
Oh.
Now, actually, what did you do to become a Baha'i?
You're saying I haven't answered your question.
You haven't answered my question yet.
Well, what
people
happened...
all around the world are just biting their fingernails waiting for the answer.
Oh, I'm sorry to keep you guys in suspense. It was very simple. Okay, so I was asked if I believed in Baha'u'llah and as the messenger and the promised one for today. And I agreed. I said, yes, I do. I was asked if I believed in the Bab. We have not probably talked about the Bab as much. I'm sure we'll dedicate an entire podcast to the Bab, the forerunner of Baha'u'llah, of the Baha'i faith. The gate is what his name is interpreted as. And I said, yes, I believe in the Bab and his mission. And I was asked if I would like to sign a declaration card, a Baha'i declaration card. And a card was presented, and I looked at the card. It was very simple. I just needed to place my name and address and sign the Baha'i card. And in signing the Baha'i card, I was a little bit hesitant. I was a single woman at the time, and I always remembered hearing in the back of my mind, always read everything carefully before signing. And so I did that exact thing. I was hesitant for a moment because I saw something on the card that caught my eye, which was contrary to one of my wishes. I felt like when I passed away, when I died, I would just, for financial reasons, be cremated. I felt like that would be my choice, and I would let my family know, and I felt like that would just be easier. I went to sign my card, and at that time, the card said that as a Baha'i, you understand that Baha'u'llah has established sacred principles, laws, and institutions which I must obey, and I understood that. And one of those, which was stated on the card, was that I would have a proper burial. And that's what caused me to hesitate with signing my card. I asked about that, I believe, at the time, and I guess this was about 15 years ago. It just wasn't yesterday, but... And I was told... it was confirmed that yes, you did have to have a proper burial as a Baha'i. You could not be cremated. That the body, and the reason for this was that the body was seen as very sacred and very precious, and that it needed to decompose very naturally and become again a part of the earth again. I thought, okay, I can, you know, come around to that. So I signed my card that day. It was September 12th, 1992.
Okay, so the process really is that the local Baha'is made sure that you knew what you were doing. They made sure that you knew what you were agreeing to. And then you just signed the card and that's it.
Yes.
Yeah, I became a Baha'i in Phoenix, Arizona in 1979. I really didn't look at the religion for very long. Once I decided that I wanted to investigate it, I went to the library, checked out some books, including a book called Gleanings from the Writings of Baha'u'llah that his great-grandson put together. I could just see that this was the truth, so I wanted to become a Baha'i right away. I was looking for something that had the truth in it. I'd seen so much that had a little bit of truth with something else that wasn't true thrown in. So I was kind of tired of looking at half-truths and decided that this appeared to be all true. So I was really ready to do whatever it took right then. So I got in touch with the Baha'is, and they couldn't believe it. They had been quite a while since anybody in Phoenix had expressed any interest in becoming a Baha'i.
Well, I hope that's not true today.
I hope that's not true also. So as Sandy did, I went to a few meetings and met some of the Baha'is, and they made sure that I knew what I was talking about, and I knew what I was doing, and then I signed the card. There are some courses. I wanted to mention those. There's a series of 7 courses that are being given all around the world in every Baha'i locality. They're called study circles, and there's 7 of them currently. They're not a requirement. It's a way of finding out about the Baha'i writings and the Baha'i life in a very organized way that seems to work for people of every background, very simple rural people with very little education find these courses very helpful, and very educated people in university towns find them equally helpful, but probably for different reasons.
Well, the wonderful book, the first study circle or the first book, it talks so much about the things that everyone wants to know more about and understand more about: prayer, life, and death.
I think it's called Reflections on the Life of the Spirit.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. It's wonderful. I went through that first study circle and enjoyed it immensely. And I had been a Baha'i for some time and found it so beneficial.
And the second book is called Arising to Serve. As we've talked about before, the Baha'i faith is basically about serving mankind, so arising to serve is a big part of that. And I think the Baha'is would like just about everybody to go through those first 2 books, but you can become a Baha'i and then go through the 2 books, or you can go through the 2 books and then become a Baha'i. It doesn't really matter. And I think that's true no matter where you are around the world. And the process of becoming a Baha'i is actually different around the world, too. In the U.S., you can actually just go online to www.baha'i.us, and somewhere on that site there's a button or something that says, I want to become a Baha'i. And you click on that, and there's an enrollment process right online. And the national organization that runs that website will forward your information to the local Baha'is around where you live, and they'll contact you. Other countries may have similar processes in place.
I'm so glad you remembered to mention that online enrollment process.
In some places of the world, there's lots of people who don't really read and write. And for them, there's not always a written process involved. Otherwise, it would be keeping people out. There's no real requirement that I can think of before someone becomes a Baha'i other than to come to some understanding, like the card that Sandy was reading from, that you acknowledge that Baha'u'llah is the messenger of God for today and that the Bab was his forerunner. And the
it also talks about Abdu'l-Bahá being the center of his covenant, that you also declare your belief in him as right. well. And I imagine the cards differ here and there. And what you do with the card after you've signed it is that you do make sure that it goes back to a Baha'i to...
Yes, there's been some people sign their cards and then just keep them and stick them in a drawer and nobody knows that they're there.
They're officially declared as Baha'is. We have to... We turn this card in. We don't keep the card as Baha'is ourselves, but we turn it in to the local spiritual assembly or someone who's in the Baha'i administration. We don't have clergy, and so at the study circles which are given all by volunteers. These are Baha'is. You can give your card to one of them, and they'll make sure that it gets to the proper channels, and eventually this card makes its way to the National Spiritual Assembly so that you were counted on the Baha'i rolls. So it will make its way to the proper channels if you turn it into a Baha'i. Just don't hold on to it once you've signed it.
The thing that I think most, the understanding that I think most Baha'is come to is that Baha'u'llah has brought the laws that are for the greatest benefit of mankind for the next 1,000 years. When you're shopping around for a Christian religion, the tendency is to find a group of Christians that already believe what you believe and just go there. And you don't have, that way you don't have to change. But if you think about it, God doesn't send us a messenger to tell us to keep doing what we're doing. God sends us messengers to tell us to change in some way. So these laws may be of some inconvenience or discomfort for one or two individuals here and there, but for the most part, they are for humanity's benefit, that Baha'u'llah came to unite the planet and also to provide a structure for humanity to advance to a higher level of civilization. All right, well, I wanted to, before we close, I wanted to say hi to a couple of people. I got an email today from Lynn in the Faroe Islands, and I was so excited. I had never even heard of the Faroe Islands, and so I went to a map and looked it up. It's kind of northwest of Scotland and west of Norway and east of Iceland.
Yes, near Iceland.
Sounds like a cold place. We're down here in sunny Florida because we can't handle the cold. We moved down here from Silver Spring, Maryland.
But we do have a Baha'i that is originally from
yes.
Iceland or the Faroe?
From Iceland, yeah.
From Iceland, so...
Maybe he couldn't take the cold either.
We know about your area from him.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I got a nice email today from, I suppose her name is Anique in France. Forgive me if I slaughtered your name. I never took French myself. So it's great to hear from people around the world. We're getting listeners from Australia and Canada, the Netherlands, Norway, the UK, of course, Mexico, the Seychelles Islands. I was excited about that, too. having lived on an island myself back in the 80s, I get excited about thinking about people on islands listening to us. What, did you have anything else you wanted to to do, dear, before we close? Okay. I want to just read. We were in one of these study circles last night, and I read this, and it just seemed such a warm, fuzzy thing to read. I thought I'd read it on the podcast, too. This is from the writing of Abdu'l-Bahá, the son of Baha'u'llah. O peoples of the world, the Son of Truth, that's a reference to Baha'u'llah, the Son of Truth, the Son of Truth hath risen to illumine the whole earth and to spiritualize the community of man. Laudable are the results and the fruits thereof, abundant the holy evidences deriving from this grace. This is mercy unalloyed and purest bounty. It is light for the world and all its peoples. It is harmony and fellowship and love and solidarity. Indeed, it is compassion and unity and the end of foreignness. It is the being at one in complete dignity and freedom with all on earth. I guess that's it for today. Remember, you're welcome to join us at any time.
You've been listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. If you'd like to learn more about the Baha'i Faith, call 1-800-22-UNITE, or in Florida, call 850-543-2129. Look on the internet at www.baha'i.org for the international site, or www.baha'i.us for the U.S. site. Remember that Baha'i is B-A-H-A-I. In Florida, our website is www.emeraldcoastbaha'is, that's with an S at the end, .org. emeraldcoastbaha'is.org. You can email me at panhandlebaha'is@aol.com. Thanks for listening.